This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Now our conversation shifts to a bit of contrarian opinion about Americans' health insurance. Could insured Americans be overtreated? Joining us here in Studio 3A is Shannon Brownlee. She's a senior fellow at the New America Foundation and has a piece in this month's Atlantic Monthly called The Overtreated American. And she's here with us in Studio 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
I'm glad to be here.
You question in your story Americans' assumption that more health care means better health care.
Yes, I think that is a pretty common assumption that we have the best health care in the world. And in fact, we do have very fine health care, very highly technological health care. But more of it isn't necessarily better for you.
Give us a for instance.
Well, if you look at the big picture, you can see differences in regions in around the United States. And so, for example, people who are eligible for Medicare in Miami use about $50,000 more medicine per year, over their lifetimes, than people in Minneapolis. But they don't live any longer, and they have no fewer disabilities. So that where is that $50,000 going? Well, it's going into what some doctors and economists and epidemiologists are thinking of as excess care.
Excess supply, you suggest, of specialists and of technology like CAT scan machines.
Well, that's certainly part of it. And it's sort of easy to fall into the trap of thinking that this is mostly sort of the high-end stuff like heart transplants. We're doing too many heart transplants or too many heart bypasses. But a lot of the excess care is really kind of rinky-dink stuff. It's too many office visits. It's getting too many tests. And at the end of life, it's ending up in the hospital repeatedly for conditions that might just as easily have been treated at home.
An enormously high percentage of healthcare costs occur in every patient's last 6 months of life.
That's right. There are several kinds of very high cost patients that all insurers pay for, Medicare and private insurance. Something like 1-2% of patients account for 30% of costs. Many of them are elderly. Many of them are in the last year or 6 months of life, or they have chronic diseases.
Now, as you look at these two different populations groups, and you mentioned you were contrasting Miami with Minnesota, what's the difference in the health of those two populations? Does it reflect it in the greater cost of that they spend on medicine?
No, it is not reflected in the greater cost. The excess care that Miamians receive does not translate into better health. And that's really the heart of the issue, is that there is certainly an optimum amount of medical care that will keep us at the optimum level of health. Too little care and you're not healthy. The optimum level and you're about as healthy as you can be, and too much care or excess care doesn't make you any healthier, and in fact it may damage your health.
So what is all of this excess capacity for?
Well, it's not for anything. It's simply that the system just kind of got that way. Because of our medical system being basically a free market system, we don't control the number of doctors. We don't really control the number of hospital beds that are built. And so the market is driven by not necessarily by demand. If you think of demand as how sick people are, then...
And how many sick people.
And how many sick people you have. Areas of the country where people are the sickest ought to be the places where you use the most medical care, but that's not the case.
For instance?
For instance, Provo, Utah. People are very, very healthy in Provo, Utah. And if their health, if the amount of medical care they got were driven by how healthy they are, they would get something like 14% less Medicare dollars than the average in the United States. And instead, they get something like 21% more than the average. And people in Richmond, by contrast, are... Richmond, Virginia, right, are less healthy than average, and they ought to be getting more medical care than average. Instead, they get less. So it's not the demand that's driving the system. It's really the supply. It's as if toothpaste manufacturers were determining how much toothpaste you use.
And you're using Medicare patients because that's consistent database all over the country?
That's right. You can use 100% sampling of the population because you have records for 100% of Medicare beneficiaries.
Is some of this, and the last time there was a major effort to reform the health coverage system in this country in the early days of the Clinton administration, that attempt, well, it was defeated for any number of reasons, but among them, you write, is Americans' fear of rationing.
Yes. Americans view places like Canada and the United Kingdom, which have nationalized healthcare systems or socialized medicine, many of us perceive that those people are being denied care that they need. And we fear rationing in this country. And so that's one of the reasons that the Clinton plan was defeated.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. We're talking with Shannon Brownlee about whether there might be overtreated Americans and systemically overtreated Americans. Our next caller is Allison, who joins us on the line from Homer, Alaska.
Thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
I worked for 7 years as an orthopedic body worker, and I would say probably 10% of the patients who came through our office routinely did exercises that they were strongly advised to do or would alter their behavior, overhead heavy lifting. Most of the patients would not do that and continued to come in and expect treatment 2 to 5 times a week. I think this same syndrome can be extrapolated to, you know, not following proper diet and exercise regimens, you know, during prenatal months or in children and adults with diabetes. And I guess I just would like to hear you folks address patient responsibility and if there's anything we can do about that. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Allison.
Thanks.
It's a very good question. Certainly, Americans are not very good at taking care of themselves. We're, compared to our European counterparts, for example, we certainly are more overweight than they are. We don't smoke as much as they do, but Americans are on average no less healthy than Europeans, and that's kind of the way I was thinking about it. I'm bringing Europeans into it because we talked about the socialized medicine aspect. Certainly, some of the pressure on the medical system has to do with patient demand. I mean, one very good example is the demand for antibiotics from pediatricians. Mm-hmm. That children have an ear infection and the doctor says it's viral and the patient may say, but I really want the antibiotic anyway.
They want to nuke it.
Yes.
They want to do something.
Right. That's right. And then eventually doctors stop even saying, no, you can't have the antibiotic, and they just kind of hand it out. But I don't know how to address that issue about Americans not taking care of themselves. This is more looking at the sort of medical side of things.
Okay, well, let's go now to Susan, who's on the line with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm a physician in Phoenix, and one of my concerns is that systematic medicine does, in a way, contribute to this problem. One of the problems we have here in Phoenix is that Medicare is called Access. And patients under Access are capitated. Most of the time a doctor's office gets a certain amount per year to care for a patient. The patients are never turned away at the door if they're unable to pay a copayment, so usually they claim that they're not able to, and which is fine. They have to have access to care. But unfortunately, the Access system was also set up that a certain number of over-the-counter medications, such as Tylenol, Sudafed, things like that, aspirin, are available only with a prescription for free, otherwise you pay for them. So patients who are very, very well aware that they have nothing more than a cold come in very frequently, you know, every 2 weeks or so, if their bottle of Tylenol has run out, because they think nothing of burdening the office for that because it requires the prescription and they can't easily afford their medication otherwise. And it just seems that they might want to set up a system where if those medications are covered and they're over-the-counter and would not normally require a prescription, the patient should just be allowed to request them rather than tying up the doctor's office to get them.
Another question basically about patient responsibility here.
Well, the patients are doing the best they can under the financial system that they're working. They want the medications to alleviate the symptoms they have, even if they do understand that a cold isn't dangerous.
Shannon?
This seems like a glitch in the system. that it's set up to overburden the system. And I don't blame patients there. If buying a bottle of Tylenol really is a burden to their budget, then this is a kind of a screwy way to help them, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It certainly is.
Well, Susan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question from Julie in Novi, Michigan, or perhaps Julie Novi in Michigan. I don't know which. For the past couple of years, my doctors have required office visits every 6 months. Used to be checkups once a year. Now I go every 6 months, kicking and screaming about it because I'm not sick. If I don't go, I can't get prescription refills for allergy medicine or my natural hormones. I see all these sick people in the office. I'm embarrassed about being there. The only advantage I see is that they're assured of that office visit fee from the insurance company. Wish this would change. So, again, the same kind of question.
This sounds like a case of supply-driven demand, supply-side demand.
Now, you write that in your article that what you describe as excess care did not make the people in Miami, as your example, healthier than the people in Minnesota. You quote one person in your article, John Wenberg, director of the Center for Evaluative Clinical Services at Dartmouth Medical School, as saying, excess care, which not only doesn't help you live longer, but may shorten your life or make it worse. How is that?
I should give credit to Dr. Wenberg and his group up at Dartmouth. They have done an extraordinary amount of research in this area, and much of my data comes from their work. And the way that excess care can damage you, there are any number of ways that excess care is not necessarily good for you, but the most basic reason is that every time you go into the hospital or have a procedure done, you face some risk. Some procedures pose greater risk than others. Longer hospital stays pose a greater risk than a short hospital stay. Because hospitals expose you to infection, hospital expose you to mistakes, they expose you to the possibility of having the wrong drug. I mean, there are all kinds of ways that, simple and large ways, that getting medical care exposes you to risk.
And let's go now to Mike, who's on with us from Boca Raton, Florida.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is along the lines of statistics, and did you look at any causal relationship to say that the folks in South Florida needed $50,000 more care just to have a similar mortality with other parts of the nation? Is there something unique in the demographics, the lifestyle, the mental health of patients that maybe wasn't looked at or not considered in your analysis? And I'll take my response off the air.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Mike, that's a very good question, and in fact, really kind of a fundamental question. Yes. Is the answer those kinds of statistics were taken into account. When you look at different regions, when the Dartmouth group looked at different regions, they found that it was not the underlying amount of disease in a region that determined how much was spent. It was the number of hospital beds and the number of doctors and the number of specialists.
Here's an email we got from Emma Lee Weibel in Lake Oswego, Oregon. An equally valid explanation of why the healthiest people are getting the most care is that they are healthier because they get the most care. Is this, and that the least healthy are sicker because they get less good and timely care. Does that track?
No, it doesn't, because you can measure what the underlying level of disease is in different regions. You can look at things like rates of obesity. You can look at rates of smoking. You can look at rates of heart disease. And smoking and obesity are not driven by how often you see the doctor. They're driven by how you treat yourself.
Yeah. We just have a minute or so left, so I'm going to ask you to solve the healthcare system in the time remaining. Given the state of these problems, given the political realities that we all saw demonstrated, 10 years ago now, where can this go to balance these regions out?
As you can imagine, it's an enormously difficult problem. We're talking about an industry that accounts for 13 to 14% of our GDP. This is a behemoth industry. It is spread all over the country. It has many, many moving parts. And so it's hard to come up with a simple solution. But there are a number of steps that can be taken. One of them is to ask places like the Mayo Clinic, the Kaiser, group practices to set benchmarks for what good standards of quality care are, because this is not just an issue of money. This is really an issue of giving people good care and not giving them more care than they need. So we need to have benchmarks for what good care is. We need to have ways of paying. And we need to train doctors in very different ways.
A conversation that should continue for some time. Shannon Brownlee, thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Sharon Brownlee wrote The Overtreated American in The Atlantic. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.